Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get this podcast. We appreciate it. Go ahead and rate us, review us. We appreciate 5 stars. You give us 4 stars, people are just going to think you're a hater. All right, coming up on the podcast, we are going to talk about the NBA awards in a little bit of a different way. Jameis, the NFL, this investigation, everything that's going along with that, and also the Right Time Book Club. We'll be talking about Friday Night Lights with Dominique Foxworth. But first, we are almost there to NBA free agency. We are almost there. Although it's funny, at the time of this recording, I don't even think LeBron has actually opted out of his contract. But come on, we know what the deal is. He ain't Melo. Melo's like, where do I sign? Where do I sign? How do I, like, why are you even asking me if I'm opting out? I am all the way in on $28 million. But we got that. We got to figure out what's going to go on with Paul George. The Spurs seem to be throwing some cold water on the prospect of a Kawhi Leonard trade affecting free agency, because they're just going to hold on as tight as they can with him, which I have to say, to a certain degree, I appreciate from them. Because somebody, look, just because these cats say they're going to leave doesn't mean you got to bow down to a bad offer. And I don't blame them for a second. Like, the thing about contracts is, if you stop playing well, they still got to pay you. Well, you don't want to be there anymore. You still got to go to work. I get that. I'm not mad at the team in any way for deciding to do that. Now, let's start, of course, with LeBron, because LeBron is LeBron. Brian Windhorst is saying that he sees it as like 51% that he winds up in Los Angeles, 40% that he winds up in Cleveland, and then the rest for the field. The idea of LeBron coming back to Cleveland just seems bananas. And you know why it seems bananas? Because we've had a couple of circumstances already where LeBron re-signed to stay in Cleveland. Remember when he was just doing those one-year contracts? Right. He re-signed to stay in Cleveland. When he was going to re-sign to stay in Cleveland, he didn't have to go talk to anybody else. They say this go-round that he doesn't want all the recruitment and everything that he had in 2010. Well, tell me something then. If he doesn't want anybody to recruit him, if he's not looking for anybody's sales pitch, then what's he waiting on if he was going to come back to Cleveland? What is there for him to consider that has not been apparent for a very long time? So, no, I can't buy into the idea that he's coming back to Cleveland. And this is one of the things about LeBron that becomes interesting. As much as he does such a great job of keeping information to himself, if he is offered any tell, that tell is this. If he acts like he might leave, he will leave. That's how it's gone. In 2010, he acted like he might leave Cleveland. He left. In 2014, he acted like he might leave Miami. He left. After that 1 year with the Cavs, he didn't act like he was leaving. He stayed. After he signed another one there with the Cavs, he didn't act like he was leaving. He stayed. This time, he acted like he might leave. I can only go from that to say that chances are he is going to wind up leaving, because I can't really make a compelling case for him to stay. I can't. Brian Windhorst, bless his heart, he's from up there. He did the best he could to get a local some measure of hope as to why it is maybe, just maybe, LeBron would stay. I'm asking the rest of y'all, would you stay? Especially if winning championships is at all part of what you're looking for, would you stay? I think the most compelling argument that you could make for why LeBron would stay wouldn't have to do with basketball, it had to do with his kids. Maybe, you know, maybe he wants them to stick around up there. Maybe he wants a little Bronny and Bryce Max. Right. Maybe he wants them to go, you know, to high school where he went. All of that stuff. Right. Like, all that, I guess, is totally possible. I don't think he's staying. I would also like to note that many times I have said I don't think LeBron is going to. And then you put something in a blank and it is about free agency. And guess what? He doesn't do that. If I think he's going to do it, he doesn't do it. I mean, look, man, I was living in Miami. I had a spot on the beach. It was the good life. There was no way in the world you were ever going to convince me that somebody would mess around and decide to go to Cleveland from that. In fact, I did some research on one of the founders of Miami. Yeah, I did that. And guess what? She was from Cleveland. Yeah, yeah. She knew what it was. Hey, what are you talking about? Then LeBron left. And by the way, it's Dave McMiniman that wrote that case, not Windhorst. He's not from there. So he didn't even have to do that to try to make the case for LeBron to stay in Cleveland. Gabe, would you, like, if you were LeBron, would you think about staying in Cleveland?
Not at this point, man. Not at this point. But do you think that even if he was going to stay, he would still make it as big of a deal just because of the way things are with him and Uninterrupted and the big media mogul that he's become?
Yeah, that is true, because the announcement is, I think, I don't know if it's been reported that it's going to come on Uninterrupted, but if I had to bet, it would come on Uninterrupted. And yeah, maybe he could do that. But the thing about that is, Gabe, he could do that whenever. Like, if he wanted to sign for one more year, he could do the Uninterrupted thing at any point when he wants to. And by the way, as I'm looking in this Dave McMiniman piece about, like, the case for staying in Cleveland, it didn't take long before we got to the kids. I feel like the kid argument has been far more compelling than anything that he's put here about basketball. Yeah, and people around the Cavs are saying, don't shut the door on Cleveland, as if they got any option or any say-so about when the door opens or closes.
Isn't it interesting that he's earned that at this point, to the point where everybody can just report that, oh, well, he's going to make the choice because of his kids and because of his family? When has that been an okay decision for anyone else?
Well, you know what I mean? it's rarely been a situation, to be fair, though, where you had a player as old as he is that's still good in this way, where that really comes up like in the calculus. I believe that Steve Nash, when he went to the Lakers, part of why he wanted to go to the Lakers is because he wanted to stay in, you know, close to Phoenix because of kids and stuff. Like, those things do kind of sort of come up. It's just, yo, man, you're right. It's LeBron James. Like, I don't think he has to explain it at all to us why he is doing this at all. I give him props for being a gangster in the way that he made that move back to Cleveland. And I was like, okay, well, if he goes back to Cleveland, he can never leave. And then he went and won that championship and was like, I can do whatever the hell I want. And everybody else is basically like, yeah, you're right, you can. But if I had to guess, he winds up with the Lakers. Unfortunately for you guys, during the week of NBA free agency, I will be on vacation. I think we'll be back on the podcast and not the TV show, but we'll be back on the podcast right around the time that LeBron signs. So we'll be able to give you guys some action on that one. Gabe, right now LeBron is doing his Caribbean vacation.
Banana boat part two?
Yeah, he's going to come back next week and go ahead and handle everything. But now he's on his Caribbean vacation. And I don't know about you, bro, but that tells me this decision has been made. If you're going on a vacation right now, that decision is done. And every time he does this, you ever notice this? It always is, I didn't really know what my decision was going to be until the end. Oh, you didn't? For real? You had no idea, huh?
They're supposed to be releasing the trailer for Space Jam 2, oh, like right after he makes his decision, apparently. So that decision already been made.
It's done. Yeah, come on, buddy. You ain't got to fool me. Like this is done. This is a wrap. Are you excited about it? Like, nothing will top what the decision was. I don't know. Maybe as we get closer, like, I do feel like he should give us a time that he's going to do it, because then we can get excited. Otherwise, we just sitting around, and poor rest of the NBA, as everybody else is just sitting around waiting to see what LeBron does. He makes the whole league stop.
Do you think he thinks about that at all? Like,
yes,
that thought crosses his mind?
If you had that kind of sway, would that thought ever not cross your mind?
Well, I mean, maybe he's so wrapped up in himself that he doesn't necessarily think about it. It's kind of like when you're in the line at the grocery store and you're getting, you know, you're almost done, and then it's like, oh, I got to send my wife to go grab hummus from the from the cold section or whatever. And then everybody in line's waiting on you and they're looking at you like, oh, you almost done? You almost
done? Nah, he knows. Gabe, that man had a television special to announce where he was going to sign as a free agent. That man knows. I imagine when he did the decision, can you imagine the lead up to that? If it involved you, just how much you'd be sitting here like, yo, I'm doing this right now. Like, I'm the one that is making this happen. So I think that he is very aware that this is what is going to go down. Now, what I would be interested in seeing, if you were Kawhi Leonard, how would you feel about LeBron winding up in L.A.? Because at one level, yeah, you're right. You know, you get to play with LeBron. You got a better chance at winning championships. But we have no idea what Kawhi Leonard wants. We have no clue what it is that's moving his decision, because none of us have ever heard Kawhi Leonard talk. None of us. The only time I've heard Kawhi Leonard talk was we ran something on Highly Questionable once, and it was a commercial that Kawhi Leonard had done for a local grocery chain. None of us have any idea what's important to him. Who knows? Kawhi Leonard may hear LeBron's coming and he could be the hater, right? Or he could be the one that's like, nah, I want to go beat LeBron. He could be that mythical warrior that everybody wants these guys to be. I don't know. I have no idea in that regard. But I think he winds up in L.A. And look, if he winds up in L.A., that is one of the worst things ever to happen to my productivity, because how am I supposed to stay up late watching all them Laker games? It has been really beneficial to us to have LeBron in the East, for those of us who live on the East, because then we could watch more of his games. Man, I can't be staying up all night trying to watch that dude. I can't do it. Except I'm going to do it, and we're all going to do it. And if they do, the Lakers will be back, and Gabe is a Lakers fan. And I imagine, Gabe, you're not one of those Lakers fans that's on the no, we don't need him, like the Kobe Stan wing of Laker fans who don't want LeBron in the jersey. Are you one of those?
Hell no, man. This is the same people who are like, oh, we got to keep the young core. We got to keep Lonzo on the team. Man, if LeBron's coming to the Lakers, I'll pack their bags.
I love that one. Yeah, no. I refuse to give up Kyle Kuzma. What the hell do you think Kyle Kuzma going to turn into? Like, what's your best case scenario on Kyle Kuzma where you don't want LeBron? Are you high? Stop tripping. Now, speaking of the Lakers, Paul George, Gabe, I don't know if you saw this, but the Paul George recruiting pitch got released. Did you see that? Sports Illustrated got their hands on the Paul George recruiting pitch?
Not only did I see it, but I also kind of imagined Jamie Foxx or Morgan Freeman reading it and playing that over and over and over again in my head, and I just couldn't stop laughing.
Yes, this is an important detail. So they wanted to do some video, and they wanted a voiceover, and the voiceover was supposed to be, quote, less Morgan Freeman / Denzel Washington and more Jamie Foxx. So they didn't want, like, that voice of God black person. They wanted a respectable, still quasi-hip black person to do the voice. And my buddy Pablo asked, he was like, so why don't you just go get Jamie Foxx? I'm like, easy, because Jamie Foxx is going to cost too much money. Lakers ain't trying to spend that much money, especially because this dude might tell them no. So they want to get somebody to do the voiceover. And so the pitch is called Two Dreams. And here's how it goes. When you were just a kid in your room dreaming from Palmdale, we were dreaming too. While you dreamt, we built for your arrival. And while we dreamt, you built too, becoming one of the world's greatest. Life's most powerful dreams are the ones where we realize ourselves, the ones that turn us into legends. That kid from Palmdale always knew it. Now the world will, too. Gabe, what'd you think about that?
I'm wondering if we can get you some narration gigs, man. That was fantastic.
Thank you. I try. You think it would sway you?
Well, I mean, I think maybe they should hire you instead of hiring Jamie Foxx. Maybe that we'd have a better shot as a Lakers fan at getting PG-13 on the Lakers. But
here's my thing. I think that the idea of them doing this is corny. At the same time, I've never had anyone like try to woo me in that way for a job. I've been recruited, but I ain't never really been wooed. You understand what I'm saying? I might, like, if they put the right visuals on top of that, some of that CGI or something like that, man, I might be in there like, where do I sign? My ego might be so swole up at that moment hearing that maybe, just maybe, it makes me want to sign for the Lakers. Or I could just be like, I feel like their pitch really needs to be, come on, baby, you know you want to live in L.A. Are you going back to Oklahoma after this? Oh, no, you're staying around. Oh, this is where you live during. Oh, okay, so you don't even really like Oklahoma. All right, I got you. I feel you.
What do you think these players want to hear? Because that pitch, that Lakers pitch, the, you know, you can live by the beach, it's beautiful weather, we're the Lakers, that hasn't worked, like, for 3 years in a row.
Yeah, now, to be fair, part of why I think their pitches didn't work is because Kobe was scaring people away. Fair. You know, like, that the prospect of playing with him while he was declining, I don't think was anything that was attractive to anybody. Like, LaMarcus Aldridge is in a place where I think he wanted to win as much as anything else. When the Lakers came to him talking about that Hollywood stuff, that wasn't what he was signing up for. So I think, like, it's going to vary with some people. But the cats that are on the second contract at, like, the Paul George level of things, you can sell all that stuff you talk about, man. But Paul George got a Gatorade commercial out of Indiana. What you got to sell Paul George on is, we are going to win. Like, to me, that is probably the best way that you could get him. Then, Gabe, there's people like Carmelo, where all you got to do is show him the numbers. You ain't really got to talk to him about nothing. Like, so the facility is, you know, right down the street from the airport. There's a lot of good housing around here. Paul, he ain't want to hear nothing about that. He's like, yo, how much this job pay, yo?
You got a bank across the street?
Yeah, that's right. Oh, great. Perfect. I can take my checks. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if Carmelo walking his checks up to the bank every week just so he knows the feeling. I could totally see that one. Now, if they got LeBron and Paul George, if the Lakers got both of them, I mean, I'm not saying they're the best team in the West because they got to fill out the rest of the roster, but whatever they could get for Lonzo, because you can't have Lonzo and LeBron there at the same time, their games don't match, never mind the fact that I don't think LeBron wants no part of the drama. The Lakers wouldn't even put LiAngelo on the summer league team because they don't want to deal with LeVar, per Ramona Shelburne. That's what that is. That's what this is coming down to. But if they get those two and then find a way to get Kawhi, I don't even see, like, LeBron doesn't even have to play defense at that point. If you got two dominant defensive wings, man, that make LeBron could play forever with those two dudes if they were set up there. So, we're going to see that. One last thing before we go to the end on this. I just want to let you know, the most interesting thing that's going to happen as it relates to free agency is the restricted free agency game, because basically that cap spike went and a whole lot of people got a whole lot of money, and that threw the labor market out of whack. But in the end, There aren't that many teams right now that have cap space. And these restricted guys, the teams that have their rights, know that people don't have cap space and they don't want to waste their time putting together an offer sheet that is ultimately going to be matched. So it's going to be real slow going in restricted free agency. And to me, the most important and most interesting thing going on in restricted free agency this year is what happens to Marcus Smart. Because none of us really know how to quantify how good Marcus Smart is, except for the fact that he makes basketball teams better. But the Celtics are not trying to pay him any more than they have to, because they got to try to pay everybody. And this could be the thing that affects, as much as anything else, the future that we all assume that the Boston Celtics are going to have. Also, by the way, they should probably just try to find a way to trade for LeBron. It could probably be done. All right, the NBA Awards were last night. They think an award show is a good idea, even though we stopped having our arguments about regular season awards a couple of months ago, because the playoffs came around. The playoffs have a way of making you forget about the regular season, which then puts you in a position where James Harden wins the MVP. And you're like, oh, yeah, that's right. Before they blew it in the playoffs, he was the MVP. Damn, you right. Like, that's what it is. Something else I noticed at the NBA Awards, Gabe, is it seems that if you return your RSVP card quickly, you can get a very good table, because I saw some pretty average players sitting really close.
Everybody was sitting together, too, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, there was the team part. And I also tell you, my favorite game during that was, who's the white dude? Right? Like, you see a table and just out of nowhere it'd be like three random out of place white dudes and only one of them could be his agent. Like, hey,
it's kind of like the green room at the draft.
Yes.
Where it's like you're sitting around a table like, who the hell is that guy?
Yeah. Like, what role do you serve in the crew? And it would be great if one of those dudes that we tell this joke about looks up and is like, I'm the head of security. That's what I do. I am the head of security. So we had that. So yeah, well, James Harden won the MVP. Rudy Gobert won the Defensive Player of the Year. Lou Williams got Sixth Man of the Year. Victor Oladipo was the Most Improved Player. Jamal Crawford got the Teammate of the Year. And I don't really understand how you can vote on that unless you're on the team with the dude at the same time. But whatever. I think I got everybody. Oh, and Dwayne Casey got Coach of the Year, you know, after he got fired.
Ben Simmons got Rookie of the Year, too.
That's right. Ben Simmons did get Rookie of the Year. You see Donovan Mitchell, they pulled up in the rookie question mark van because they wanted to be as lame as possible all the way to the end.
And he had a customized hoodie, too.
He did have a customized hoodie. That's so whack. All of it is so whack. Why should you be Rookie of the Year, Donovan Mitchell? Because of a technicality. Get out of here, dog. You look silly right now. You and your whole crew. And your crew is Adidas. Your whole crew looks silly right now trying to carry out this. But we thought about some other awards that we got here. Gabe has got some awards that we've got. Now, Gabe, do you want to, how should we do this? Should I read them all, or do you want to read the award?
Well, I could read the award that we came up with.
Got it.
And then you can give me yours, and then I can give you mine.
That'll work.
Award number one, the Still in the League Award.
Ooh, this is interesting. I feel like there's really only one answer for the He's Still in the League Award. And I feel like that because I've seen him walk around our office in the morning, because he comes and does get up. And whenever he comes to do get up, I have to remind myself, wow, he's still in the league, even though he graduated from high school in 1995. And his name is Jason Terry.
Yeah, that's what I had. I totally agreed. I was looking at the list of like oldest players in the league and I was like, wait a minute, Jason Terry?
Yes.
Still on a roster? Still playing for the Bucks?
He's been there. He's been in the league for 19 years. Like, Vince Carter would be a competitor for this because he got into the league the year before, and Dirk Nowitzki also. But we know Dirk is in the league. And we know Vince Carter's in the league, because every time we see Vince Carter in the league, we're like, damn, Vince Carter's in the league. But Jason Terry plays for Milwaukee, which means you probably don't see him very much.
The second award that we thought of, the Stay Ready Award.
Yes.
Stay Ready All-Star. A user tweeted at me, and his suggestion was Nate Robinson, and I totally bought into it after watching him on the Big Three.
Yes, even though he's not in the league, he did go snatch that mask from Rashad McCants, and Rashad McCants looked like he was so ready to fight. See, the thing with Rashad McCants is, Rashad McCants has all these different emotions that he goes through, but his face never changes, which makes it all just a little more, I don't know what to make out of this, per se. But yeah, he's up there. Let me tell you, man, the underrated Stay Ready All-Star in the NBA, because you don't really watch a whole lot of their games, man. Tyler Ulis of the Phoenix Suns might be number one. Tyler Ulis is from Chicago. Tyler Ulis is 5'9", and whenever a tussle starts, I notice Tyler Ulis immediately balls up his fist. Balls up his fist. Once the shove comes, he is prepared for where this might go. Because at that height, he's had to fight for everything he's ever received.
How about the meme immortalization award? The J.R. Smith meme from the finals will be seared into my memory for eternity.
Yeah, that is easily the most memorable moment of the NBA season, right? J.R. Smith getting the ball and running away. It's the Nick Anderson free throws if the Nick Anderson free throws were funny as opposed to just being heartbreaking and tragic. This was hilarious. And has J.R. finally figured out what he was trying to do? Should we ask him that at the beginning of next year? Because he couldn't seem to come up with an answer this year.
I wonder if he'll go back to denying it because he's already flip-flopped a couple of times.
He has. He has. Like, what's he going to tell his daughter when this comes around? And she's like, Daddy, why does everyone always look at you and ask if you know what time it is?
Daddy, why did they sell your jersey from game one of the NBA Finals in 2018?
Yes, like, what's the score? That's the question that people will be asking JR for the rest of his life. I am with you on the JR. What else we got?
How about the next teammates to throw down? I thought immediately Lonzo and Kuzma.
They have to be, right? Like, I just, you know, and they swear they're cool. They swear that the rest of us just don't understand what their relationship is. But, bruh, Kuzma got on the Instagram and said he was going to beat him up. Like, how I'm the one that doesn't get it when you're the one that's giving it to us. Help me help you. Like, how am I supposed to know that that's what that is? So, yeah, I feel like those guys are way up there. I still think, man, Simmons and Embiid, there's a chance. There's a chance, and they're of similar height. It would be a fair fight. Could you see it?
I could see it. We got a ticking clock there in Philly, man.
Yes, it could happen. It could totally happen. You see their kind of half hug when Simmons won the Rookie of the Year?
Oh, I did. And then I also saw that later it was announced that Embiid, and maybe this was a joke and I just didn't catch it, that Embiid's going to be on the next cover of like NBA 2K or NBA Live.
He is on the cover of 2K. That's right. And you know he's going to be showing everybody and telling everybody about it. I'm the cover boy.
He was last night, too.
Yes.
Like, couldn't let it be Simmons' night. Had to be his night.
Nope. That's because he's salty. He did win Defensive Player of the Year, and he thinks he's the best defensive player in the league. There we go. What else we got?
Next to date a Kardashian. Speaking of our boy Ben Simmons.
Yeah. I see your who's your choice?
Well, I thought, okay, well, who came second place to Simmons last night? Well, Spida Mitchell.
Yes.
What about him?
I can see it because he absolutely badly wants to be seen. He totally wants to be seen. And please put us in a situation where the games in Utah have a Kardashian courtside. And so we can find out what the locals have to say about that. You think they'd enjoy that? You think maybe that might lead sports talk radio in Salt Lake City for a little while?
I can't imagine much else is going on in Salt Lake City.
That's right. By the way, I feel like we got another award here. The most likely to get dunked on.
Timofey Mozgov.
Ah, he's up there, especially since he might get some playing time now that he's gotten traded. But my guy... Now, my vote on this one, it's Aaron Baines from the Celtics, who stays getting dunked on because he stays putting himself in positions to get dunked on. Like, I feel like Mozgov can get caught in traffic and just not be able to get out of the way. Aaron Baines has decided that he's going to run in front of semi-trucks. Like, that's what he does. Couldn't be me. Got to be a better way to make a living. So, yeah, that is who we've got for the NBA awards. Actually, for the awards they already gave away, I told you, I forgot who I thought was supposed to win those things. Should have done it sooner. All right, so we got a lot going on here with James Winston and the suspension that we heard might come down soon of 3 games. My buddy Jeff Cameron, he does radio for ESPN Radio in Tallahassee. He said the Winston camp was bracing for a 3-game suspension and that what they said he was going to get popped for was a failure to report, though that begs the question, what did you fail to report? Which is where it gets to be tricky. It's kind of like when somebody gets locked up for resisting arrest and it's like, what were you arresting him for? And they're like, oh, nothing. But I don't understand. Like, it's that sort of place. Here's the thing for me. And all things as they relate to Jameis tend to come back to one question. Do you believe that in 2013 he committed a sexual assault? Because if you believe that in 2013 he committed a sexual assault, then everything subsequent to that obviously is going to be colored by the belief that he, A, is capable of being a rapist, and B, that he is a rapist who got away with it and is still allowed to prosper. So that's going to color the analysis that you get from people when it comes to things about him. I have said that I don't think that I have seen enough information for me to say anything definitively in either direction. I can't say that. I'm not going to sit here and say I think that Jameis is innocent because I don't know if Jameis is innocent. But I also can't say I think Jameis did it, not based on what it is that I have seen. I can't do that. If you can, I'd be curious to see your argument for why exactly that is the case. I'm just not in the place where I can go that far yet. But here we are again with Jameis being accused of getting into an Uber and groping the Uber driver. I'm inclined to believe this one. Now, whether me being inclined to believe it is an adequate standard for him to be punished, I am inclined to believe this one. And his immediate response when this came out, because Uber had suspended his account and the world found out about this because as the Me Too scandal was got bigger and bigger, BuzzFeed had the Uber driver, you know, come to them and say, look, this is my experience with Jameis Winston. And she said that she had pulled up to a spot, I think it was in Arizona, and that she had pulled up to a spot and they had told her that a big famous football player was getting in the car with her and that she should be excited. And then it was Jameis, and then Jameis sat in the front seat and he asked her to drive him somewhere where he could get some food, and then while they were there he put his hand on her crotch, and she said she just froze before she told him to move her hand away. She told Uber canceled his account. The Jameis response to that was that the Uber driver was mistaken about who was sitting in what seat and how many people were in the Uber. Then Ronald Darby, who is Jameis's college teammate, Ronald Darby then corroborated Jameis' story and was like, yeah, I was in the Uber with him. That did not happen. But there was a third gentleman whose name is Brandon Banks, who was with them while all this was going on in Arizona. Brandon Banks happens to be in prison right now pending appeal for a sexual assault conviction for which he's facing 15 years. Now, the last thing that dude apparently needs is his name tied in some sexual assault allegation. And so he has said that, no, there were multiple Uber rides, and this Uber ride that they're discussing, he was not there for. He says that they were at some club, and Jameis got so drunk that they had to send him home. And so drunk, they put him in the car, and they sent him home, and that this was the Uber ride in question. And so he was not in a position to say whether or not Jameis had done anything. The next level of that, though, is that his lawyer has said that the NFL contacted Banks while he was in jail and that he said that he would talk to them, but he would only talk to them with his attorney. His attorney then says that the NFL never contacted him. And not once after that did the NFL decide to contact him so that they could talk to Brandon Banks. That did not happen. So I lay all that out to say, we have people on both sides of this matter who have no credibility. Jameis Winston doesn't have much credibility on this one. The NFL and their shoddy investigations don't have any credibility on this one, especially if there was somebody that Jameis Winston is claiming was with him during this Uber ride, and you have a chance to talk to that person, and that person says, yeah, I'm down to talk to you, I just need to have my lawyer present. And then you, the NFL, all right, then never mind. Like, what? Like, how rigorous could this investigation have been if that's the approach that they took? Because in the end, we're going to have to trust what their conclusions are. And when it comes to trusting their conclusions, I'm not saying we have to trust their conclusions through the lens of whether or not they're going to be fair to Jameis. I'm not even going in that direction. That's possible that that could wind up being something. But no, I'm looking at it in the other direction. And the other direction is, the NFL has looked at times in their investigations as though they had decided from the beginning what they wanted to do, and then they wanted to go find supporting evidence to come behind whatever it was, the conclusion that they had already drawn. What conclusion does it pay for the NFL to draw in this case? Because I could make an argument that the conclusion it pays for the NFL to draw is the one that shows that Jameis did something to that they're punishing him, but then keeps Jameis out there, because we are talking about a franchise quarterback here. And everybody's kind of with league, you know, surrounding the league has kind of gotten behind like Team Jameis. You don't hear the other stuff really come up that much anymore. Like, this is what they're on. This is the game that they're playing here. And who in the world am I supposed to believe here? Because I don't feel like either of them or any of them right now are people that have earned my trust. I don't feel like anybody involved in this, like from this level of it. I'm not at all talking about the Uber driver herself. I'm talking about on the level of the adjudication of the matter as it relates to the league. I don't think any of them have earned a measure of trust from me. I don't. And I think the NFL better be ready, because if this was floated out here by either side as a trial balloon to see how three games was going to go over, If people believe that Jameis actually did this and then they believe that the NFL did not put forth a serious investigation, then 3 games isn't going to cut it. And one thing we know about the NFL is it is an entirely reactionary body when it comes to these matters of discipline. So if they feel like streets don't think they gave a strong enough punishment, one way or another, they're probably going to find a way to give more of a punishment. And then it winds up being a matter of whether or not they've treated Jameis fairly. Then that point does, in fact, arise, as it did with Ray Rice, where you can find what Ray Rice did to be abhorrent, but also look at the way the league handled it and say, yo, that was messed up too. And that's what happened when the NFL decided they were going to get themselves into the player discipline business. They put themselves in a position where these were the things that they were going to have to deal with. These were the things they were going to have to put up with. And I didn't ask them to do it. To this day, I don't really know who it was that asked Roger Goodell to go about it this way. I don't know who it was that told him this would be the best use of his time. But I do know this. It is fair for everyone involved here if they find out that Jameis Winston committed this, you know, act. It's fair to ask whether or not they should put him on the street. Like, it's a legitimate question to ask. If this comes up and this is what it is, hey, man, if there are women who wind up marching around that stadium about this, what do you wind up doing? But here's the thing about the NFL. They've told us whose opinions they care about. You can see it through the Kaepernick thing. It's not that they're trying to please everybody these days. They're trying to please a very particular set of people. Not everyone, a very particular set of people. And you know what? If those people just kind of shrug their shoulders because they're like, eh, I mean, just touched a woman. If those people shrug their shoulders, NFL's going to ride that 3 games out, and then Jameis is going to come back. And guess what? We probably going to watch the games. Oh, by the way, before I forget, last thing on this, why I say this is also like really tricky and bad look for Jameis. Ronald Darby, his college teammate who is supposed to be his alibi witness, in effect, for this situation in Arizona, who was supposed to be in the Uber that may not have been the one that's actually, you know, in dispute. He was also Jameis' alibi witness, in effect, for the alleged sexual assault in 2013. So I ask you again what I'm supposed to trust here. Man, it is hard to find good talent for jobs. So many ways to do it, so many ways that don't work. But ZipRecruiter knew there was a smarter way. So they built a platform to help find the right candidates for you. ZipRecruiter figures out what you are looking for, finds the right people with the right experience, then invites them to apply to your job. And that has really changed the way that you find your next hire. 80% of employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate on that site just one day, and they don't stop there. They even spotlight the strongest applications that you receive. You'll never miss a great match. The right candidates are out there. ZipRecruiter, that is how you find them. Businesses of all sizes trust ZipRecruiter for their hiring needs. And look, right now, my listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free. Free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/Bomani. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Bomani. ZipRecruiter.com/Bomani. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Ah, yes. It's time for the Right Time Book Club. Fosworth, is that a like adequate British accent? Weren't you barn over there or something?
I was, but I left before I was old enough to really hear or understand anything. I was on a military base anyway. I was talking American over there.
I didn't know we had military bases in England. That doesn't feel like someplace I can see people just walk around in camouflage.
Oh, we got them everywhere.
I mean, I know we do, but like that is like when you think about when people are like, yeah, I got stationed somewhere. It's normally not, you don't hear people like, oh, I was stationed in jolly old England.
Yeah, that's true. I feel like it's a lot of Japan, a lot of Germany. A lot of those places, but yeah. I don't know. I don't know what the deal was. Maybe it's all a lie. Maybe everything's been a lie.
They just told you that as a phony birth certificate. You could never run for president.
I could be actually like 45. They just turn that birth certificate down like they do baseball players.
That is true. This is our man Dominique Fosbury. Check him out at The Undefeated. Also, The Morning Roast, Sunday mornings on ESPN Radio. And he is joining us for the Right Time Book Club. We're reading Friday Night Lights this summer. We're doing 4 chapters every month. And then we have somebody on to talk about them. Dominique is kind enough to join us. And so, yes, I chose Friday Night Lights by Buzz Bissinger because I think it's just maybe as good a look at American life as anybody is going to find using football kind of sort of as the prism. Now, had you read this before we got into this project?
No, I hadn't. And I mean, I agree with you and I appreciate you assigning me this book because I have never read it, in part because like my whole life has been a lot of football. And so I didn't really want to read a book about football, but you're right. I'm 4 chapters in. I read all the preface and all those things. And It's not about football. It's just like football is a landscape they're using, or he's using, to tell stories about America, frankly.
And part of what's interesting to me, and so we get into chapter one where he lays out the town of Odessa, Texas. So, you know, Friday Night Lights is set in Odessa, Texas. Odessa Permian High School is a big football deal in the state of Texas in general. This is a West Texas spot. It's an oil town. And so the booms and busts of the oil business very much affected how things went in the town. We talk about the way the integration, you know, the Civil Rights Act and everything else affected these things in the town. And part of what I thought was, like, for me, as a native Texan, well, I wasn't born there, but I grew up there. So, like, as a Texan, I understand, like, the cultural significance of football and what it means to these towns. But you, even as a football player, you're from a different part of the world. And I get the feeling that it wasn't quite as serious for you as it is for these people.
No. I mean, I think even though I was a football player, you know much more about it than me. And I found that chapter to be particularly enlightening for me, because while I did play high school football, I played high school football in Baltimore County. Like, it is, we don't care the way that they care. And so I don't know if it was the preface or if it was chapter one, but I really appreciated how they laid out the history of the city, because I think it gave me a good idea for the culture of a place like that. And it seemed like a lot of those themes were like the independence and I'm not sure what the right word for is it, but it's just resilience is like the positive spin on what I'm actually thinking. But they're just independence, I guess, is the best word. That feels like it's ingrained in Texas culture, and particularly in that city.
Yeah, West Texas in particular, because like the range, like open space, is like the defining characteristic of Texas, and like the individual liberty that comes from the fact that you don't really have to share space with people. You know, therefore people, that's the way they look at it. Like our man Terrence says that this was the setting, but it could be any town in America. And I say, yes, that's true. But there's a particularity though to the thing with Odessa, because the booms and busts are about oil. Right. It was like what the price of oil could do to people. But the one thing that was constant was this football team. And so I was like, it's old Bill Withers line, the city ain't no bigger than the friendly people that you meet. And so for them, being a Permian Panthers is the most important thing there was.
Yeah. I mean, I think the oil thing just makes it condense. Like the booms and busts in American culture maybe take longer time to develop. But I think that, to defend my man, that is kind of true, that those booms and busts, they happen in Texas more quickly than they happen, or at least in this area, more quickly than they happen in the rest of America. But you can see those same themes playing out.
You're right. By the way, can you imagine being a high school football coach and people putting for sale sign in your yard?
I'm a high school football coach. I'm here for the kids.
Like, yes.
I don't need my job, my livelihood threatened.
Yo, man. They're not here for it. So that was chapter one. Chapter two was entitled The Watermelon Feed. And this is a very Texas thing, as you talk about there, that us against the world, like Gabe calls like a frontier mentality. But that is very, very, very Texas. It is wild, because I don't remember this happening, but Texas had a no pass, no play rule, that if you did not pass all your classes, you could not play in the next grading period. And that was in part pushed by Ross Perot. And one of the examples that Ross Perot was using was Odessa, because he said they were so football crazy. And at that time had what was a crazy $5.6 million stadium. Man, we got people in Texas now building $100 million stadiums.
Yeah, the Ross Perot nugget was interesting because it spoke to how important football is to that society. Because Ross Perot, you would think that's their candidate. Like, he was an oil man. Yeah, that's their boy, you would think. But he said one slick thing on Nightline and they were done with him. He wouldn't even come to the city.
I want to make sure that our kids pass their classes.
How dare you? That's blasphemy.
Right. They're like, no, you don't want to do that. That's no, but that was the thing though about high school that was wild for me, man. These cats would always make it through football season, but they ain't all make it with us to graduation.
That's sad.
Yeah. I mean, that was the thing. They did not all make it with us through graduation, but all of that though is such a great setup though from Bissinger on, and part of what's so great about the way he writes this is that it's so thorough, but he's never talking over your head in any sort of way whatsoever. And he came into this as a complete outsider, to the culture, but it just speaks to the role that being a high school football player plays, like the thing with the Pepettes, being there with you. And basically, like, if you made the team, girls are what you got. Like, it was in the contract.
Yeah, I mean, I that was one thing. So this whole time I'm reading the book, I'm trying my best to not be judgmental and like assume that these people are not bad actors, because this inherent sexism that exists in our culture, it seems to be like hyper in that place. And I guess the same thing could be said for the racism. But the whole time I'm thinking it's an undue amount of pressure on these kids. Like, they're carrying the weight of the entire city, it seems like. Doesn't quite qualify as a city, the whole town. And the whole time I'm thinking of it, it's like, what do they really get out of this? Like some applause or whatever? And I guess that's where the pepettes come in, and the girls in general is like, there's a feeling that they are entitled to them, and they like belong to them to some degree if you make it to a contributor on the Permian football team.
It's pro football, right? It's just that we've reduced the scale, but for that area, this is pro football.
Yeah, I mean, I can't disagree with that, but it's different than pro football in many respects, in that it's so much worse for the players. Like,
yeah, because there's no check, right? The payoff.
Having been a pro football player, like the reward is now, like, I work at ESPN because I want to. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's a real nice thing to have, and I don't take it for granted. The reward for them is like, they like have their pick of the high school girls for the fall, and then yes, they leave with no education.
Yes, that is exactly what I'd say. That is it. The reward for them, this is going to be the best time of your life.
That's so depressing.
Yes, that is the most depressing thing you could possibly imagine, but that's the reward. This is going to be the best time of your life. And when we talk about the depression of that, that gets us to chapter 3, which is the Boobie chapter. And, you know, Boobie Miles has become a pop culture icon, but it starts with this book where he's a story that I think is kind of decidedly 80s in the sense that he suffered this catastrophic knee injury where he was in high school. And in this day and time, they might be able to repair that and get him back. But for him, that was a wrap.
Yeah, that's... Like, I know of Boobie Miles, even though I didn't read Friday Night Lights until we started this, but I knew of Boobie Miles, to your point of it being a cultural touchstone to some point, but I didn't know all the details about him, his uncle kind of adopting him, LV Miles, and all the pressure that his uncle was putting on him, and the history of race. Like, I keep bringing it up, I'm sure we'll get to it at some point, but this, like, it hangs over the entire book and how race impacted LV and how it impacted Boobie and how they just generally didn't care about the kids, the black kids or the black adults, unless they had some contribution to that Permian football team.
And you know, when Bissinger talks about this book, you know, and writing it, he says, you know, he talks about moving there and just being struck by the overtness of the racism, and that like the use of the N-word was just so casual and common, even in reference to somebody like Boobie, who they halfway said they loved because of what he could do for them, comma, but, right?
It's true of this entire book. There are things that happen in any of our societies or cultures that are just kind of relics, and we like keep them around because we're used to them. And to some degree, I don't want to say you don't know any better, but you're just so comfortable with it. And when an outsider comes in and really like makes you face how ridiculous it is, like I think that's what their football culture comes down to. That's where like the overt racist language comes down to. It's like it's always been like this, and no one's ever questioned like, is this really right? And I wonder how they reacted, like when this book came out, like how they reacted to the rest of the world.
They were not pleased. They were not pleased at all. Like they were not happy with Bissinger. They felt that Bissinger had basically betrayed them, that they let him in and then he kind of went and took the side of the others after he'd been there for this whole year, you know, and doing all the work. But, you know, you talk about this with, you know, the no education part. The fact that so many people would say that they worried what would happen to Boobie Miles if he didn't play football, but gave him no preparation for what to do without football.
Right. Yeah. I mean, back to the point you were making there about Bissinger turning on them. It popped in my mind. Like, that is a book that only a white journalist could write. Like, probably yes, only a white male journalist could write. Like, a black woman can't walk in that town and get the same access and get the same, real content. But, to your point about them not preparing Boobie Miles, like, yeah, that seems true, but it also is like, the responsibility is certainly on the society, but to the point I was making before, like that is life in Odessa. And maybe I'm going too far. Like you've made fun of me before about like being too much of a like bleeding heart and trying to understand everybody's perspective, but like that is what life is there. And yeah, it's like weird of it feels almost unfair of me to look at them and say, no, but Boobie Miles, y'all supposed to change everything. You're supposed to see the light. Like, I'm sure there are things, not I'm sure, I can think of several things in my life or several times in my life where I mean, you use women, for example. I've thought about women in my life a different way than I did when I was mature. And I expect, I guess, yeah, that's not fair necessarily, because then they are mature. They are adults. So I'm trying to find a way to defend them.
I found a part, the place where your heart can bleed, and this all makes sense. No, but really though, so we're talking about why aren't you thinking about life with Boobie to get out of Odessa? And I think the point you're making is they ain't thinking about life of getting out of Odessa neither.
That's true. Nobody got them out of Odessa.
No. Like, that's not what they're thinking. They're like, yo, how much better does it get than this? Like, yeah, maybe you go play college football, but in the end, this is going to be the best days of your life. So like the movie Friday Night Lights, I think it was Tim McGraw that was playing that one kid's dad that was so hard on him, you know, while he was playing, because this was it. Like, this is being a Permian Panther, playing for Mojo was the highlight. And so for Booby, they're like, they only got him there playing football for what he can do for them in the first place, to, you know, all the way down to the way the school district lines are drawn.
And they probably look at the other black kids and think that Booby got it good. Cause there are plenty of other black kids who are less prepared, and probably white kids too, who are just as poorly prepared for the world as Booby, but they don't at least Booby get that one fall where he's the man. Like that, I imagine that they look at it that way, that Booby should feel lucky and fortunate that he's had these gifts.
Especially with the irony of it, right? Because that the hallmark of that team was always that they were smaller and not as athletic as the other teams that they would play, but they played so hard and tough, you know, and it was striking that they had all the white guys on the team, you know, post-integration in Texas, they could still compete the way they did. But in the end, they felt like to win, they still needed a Booby Miles. And so they had to put up with it.
They had to cross into the town to get the athletes that they needed. Yeah, I don't know. I also found like you're talking about how they kind of revel in the personality of the team, and they believe that kind of never stay die, that fight undersized thing is something that resonates with the whole town. Like that did strike a chord in me, and something that I have experienced where you are in a mindset, like you're teetering on sanity, frankly, like on the edge of being a normal person in order to get to where you need to get to play in a football game. And I feel like I've had teammates who stayed in that place all the time, and I didn't understand that. And through the course of my college and professional career, like, it was a slow deterioration of that mindset and coming to a more normal mindset, which is part of the reason, like, it made it harder to continue to play. And, like, when I was in high school, you're young and you're kind of, you feel invincible, you're kind of stupid. It's pretty easy to, like, convince yourself that the team across town, like, you actually hate them. You actually want to kill them. Like, I can remember feeling that about people, and I didn't think it was abnormal at the time, but it seems like it's probably an exclusively short of war. Like, it is a football phenomenon, and it is pervasive, particularly in Texas.
Yeah, also, man, you fight for, I mean, it is hyperbolic to say that football players are fighting for their lives, but not really, right? Like, yo, that dude over there is not trying to kill me, but he is willing to hit me hard enough to kill me.
I mean, it's short of combat sports, it's the only sport where, like, part of the game is to try to hurt people. Like, it's this new safer, NFL is a new thing that doesn't really bleed into the culture the way the game is played, even in NFL. Like, the idea of making somebody pay for going over the middle, or the idea of, okay, you're gonna tackle a guy, they may have got the first down, but we're gonna make him feel it. Like, that's part of the game. Part of the game is to inflict pain on someone else. And like, there's no other sport. Like, you can play a basketball game and you could be the best team in the league, in any league, and not necessarily hurt anybody. Football, you can't be good if you're not hurting people.
And you need people to be afraid that they might get hurt. Like, that's a significant part of the calculus.
Yeah, absolutely. And to get your, and back to the point I was making, like, to get your mind to that place, like, that's a weird thing. I suspect that most people have been in a fight, and you know the rage that you feel when you're fighting. You're not thinking clearly, and you're just really trying to hurt somebody. Like, to get your mind, that's not a healthy place to be on a regular basis. And they were asking those kids to be there to the point where you could lose a testicle and be like, nah, I'm gonna go ahead and keep playing. Like, that happened in the book.
Now, in chapter 4, we get to some other things there. One is, you know, and this to me, like, looking back at Booby, is like the saddest part is having read this book as an adult, which is he thinks it's different for him because he's Booby Miles. He doesn't realize that everybody else is getting treated worse.
Yeah, that's sad, but true. To tie it back to like my experience, like that's the experience of the NFL quarterback. Like as a president of the union, like I've had to deal with or work with lots of players to accomplish lots of things, and it's always the quarterbacks that think that, nah, they're a little bit better than the rest of us until they figure out, nope. Like, I remember for Drew Brees, it was when he hurt his shoulder. He's like, oh, they don't really care about me. Peyton Manning was when, he had his back hurt and they were trying to get rid of him. He's like, oh, yeah, they don't really mess with me. And I think the same thing is true for Booby, in that he kind of thinks he's special, but he also thinks he deserves to be treated even better.
Yep. As a black dude in Odessa.
Yeah, I'm not sure what it does for the psychology of the black people in Odessa, because the part of the idea that they're able to use the N-word so willy-nilly and they treat black people in a certain way, like not that full equality is realized in any state of America in the 80s or even now for that matter, but the idea that the black people didn't even seem to be, or at least Bissinger didn't write about them looking to affect for some sort of change. Like that is also a little bit like mind blowing. Like the culture of the place is most of the black people are like, yeah, this is life in Odessa.
Yeah. And they drew the lines. Basically, you're only there hopefully because you'll be good at football. Otherwise, we have no use for you.
I mean, it seems like a sloppier attempt for a lot of the other things that were happening in America, because you feel like there's something connivingly brilliant about like depriving black people of home loans. Like that is a sneaky way to affect the society in a way that you wanted to. But it seems like in Odessa, they weren't even that smart. They just like, look, you black, I don't mess with you. You live over there. And the black people were kind of like, all right. That's what we do.
like what are we going to do about it? How we fix this? What I'm gonna do? Buy a house cash? No, we're going to stay over here. Now, another part of this, and I'm curious, you know, you as someone who played, you know, high level sports for a very long time, Christina makes a point about the dude Mike in the book and how he didn't even get satisfaction out of hitting home runs in baseball. Right. Like he was just doing this to please his parents. Like that to me is one of the sadder things about this is it doesn't even sound like these kids are necessarily having a good time.
Yeah, I think was it the quarterback Winchell, right? Who just seemed to be racked by like unimaginable stress. Like that's not fun. That's not a fun way to go through. I remember my junior and senior year in high school. Like it was really fun time. Like I was chilling, playing against some random Baltimore County teams that weren't really that good. If we lost, like I was mad, but I was over it by the time Monday came around. But like these guys, no, like this is something that there are games and plays, mistakes that I've made playing that sit with me for my entire life. And sometimes I think about them and they make me angry. Those were in the NFL. Like I can't remember much about my high school career. Like I didn't care about those games that much. And the idea that I'm walking around, or these kids are walking around, frankly, with seems like feeling more pressure than I felt when I was playing professionally. Like that just seems terrible for a young man to have to deal with. But I guess at the end of the day, they feel like the rewards are worth it.
But also keep in mind, man, this book is 30 years old. And so in a lot of ways, it feels like this foreshadows just what like high school sports have become across the board. Like I think about it, like our network, we broadcast high school basketball games because we do it because there'll be like a one or two stars in there. But I'm thinking, yo, there's 10 dudes up there that should never be dealing with the scrutiny of playing on television. You know what I mean? Like they're just not that good. That's not what these games are supposed to be.
And I mean, you think about Odessa and they didn't have a bunch of games on national television, but their whole world, like it's almost worse. Like being a football player in the NFL, like if I had a bad game, the whole, like all the football fans were upset and gave me a hard time, but I could go other places in my life and not experience that. Like in the 80s in Odessa, Texas, like their entire world cared and knew about how they performed. Like that's which is why I feel like in some ways you could argue that it is tougher than being, at least emotionally tougher than being in the NFL, because I'm a grown man who's getting paid well. If I'm having a tough time in Denver, let's say when I was playing there, I could go to Vegas, or I could go somewhere, a part of the city where people didn't care about football. That world didn't exist for them. Like the world that they knew was Odessa, Texas, and if things didn't go well, everybody knew. I imagine you couldn't go to the grocery store without knowing that people were talking bad about you before you walked in.
Or you could call your parents, right? Like, I feel like these kids can't even call their parents because their parents want that dub. Their parents want the dub like everybody else wants the dub because they are of this. And that's rough.
I looked it up before we started. Only 6 players have made it to the NFL. And I think Roy Williams, the receiver, is the only one who, like, actually played a substantial amount of time. So like the way that people explain away the inequities in college sports is often like, oh, but they get a chance to go pro. Like, nah, they're not really, nobody's really going pro out of Odessa. Like this is where it begins and ends. And it feels like the funny thing here is it feels like the reading the book, the players know that, which wasn't true, weirdly enough, of my Baltimore County football experience. Like, there were a few guys who were not getting D3 offers, but was like, yeah, when I'm in the NFL. Like that, those kids know, like, nah, this is it. Probably because they see it all the time. Like, they remember when they were, I guess, 10, 11, 12, and they saw the big football star who just so happens to still be down the street sweeping up at a restaurant or something.
Yeah, man, I saw those and I went back for high school reunion, man, and that was rough. Like it really was. Tough. Like, I was listening to a guy and he was talking to me and he was just like, yo, these people in this town, you know, they had all the love for me when I was playing football, but now I'm around here and they can't do nothing for me. And that was so wild to think of for me because, yo, I graduated from high school 21 years ago. Like, I like to still be thinking about that, but I can't imagine how they treated him when he was on top.
That's tough. So, like, we're being, like, completely transparent. Like, I retired from the NFL and it was my choice, frankly. Like, I could have probably played a little longer and I went on to like fancy schools and like I was planning for my transition the whole time and I thought like I was prepared for it. But like, it still was difficult to go through that transition. And like, I have all the benefits that you could think of, like a beautiful wife and family and like some financial security. Like, and going through that felt odd for me in my 30s. Like, go through that at 18 with no real support system to think of, no real resources to think of, and no real opportunity. It's not like you can go back to high school and do it better the second time so that you can get into college.
Right.
Like, that just has to be, I can't imagine the psychological toll and how difficult going through that is. And it's not something that many people experience. So it's not like you can call somebody and be like, hey, let's talk about how we're going to work through this. All the people that they probably look at are people who tried to work through it and failed. It seems like maybe it's grim the way I'm talking about it, but it's depressing.
No, but this is, I mean, it's a thing that James Baldwin talked about in The Fire Next Times, like the idea of having to hustle. That when people see you, they know who you are, what your thing is at the very least. And what these guys' thing will be is that they played for this football team. But it's not even that they play for it now. It's like, this is the thing. Hopefully you'll take this with you because it gets no better for you in Odessa.
What's Odessa like now? Like, there's, I Googled the school and the football team came up, but was there any introspection? Like, I don't expect that you went down there and checked it out, but maybe you've read articles over the years.
Yeah,
introspection and improve?
I don't think they looked at business and was like, yo, we had to change what we was doing. They was like, yo, man, why you out here snitching? that's it. Why you out here snitching? But hey, man, that is Dominique Foxworth. Check him out on the Morning Roast, 9 to 12 Eastern on Sunday mornings on ESPN Radio. Check him out at theundefeated.com. And also for the book club, we're going to do this every month. So July 31st will be the next installment. Read chapters 5 through 8 to catch up with us for what we're going to be doing on July 31st. My man, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
I appreciate it too, man. Thanks for having me. And I'm actively rooting against whoever the next person is. I'm determined to be a better guest.
Hey, man, I'll let you know how the competition goes. We'll maybe take some votes.
All right. I'm in.
All right. Now, thanks for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this here twice a week. My man Gabe Bassain handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. All right. ESPN's also got a brand new MMA podcast, Ariel Helwani's MMA Show, with new episodes every Monday. Thursday, we'll have an interview for you. Be sure to check that out with us. Also, remember, give us 5-star reviews. Apple Podcasts, wherever you are, rate us, review us. You only give us 4 stars. I mean, that is really sort of kind of hating when you think about that. All right. So check that out. Remember, check out Friday Night Lights, chapters 5 through 8 for July 31st, and we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.
The Right Time with Bomani Jones is presented by Goodyear. Discover the possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.